Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Connolly, Judge Werke, Judge Wheelock, the Honorable Francis J. Connolly presiding.
Thank you. Let's all be seated. Good morning. Our first case is 824-1263, Karen Furman versus Town and Country Campground Incorporated et al. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief, respondent will have 15 minutes, and then finally the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone. You can adjust the podium up and down to your level, and then just begin by telling us who you are in a loud voice, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Matt Barber here on behalf of the appellant, Karen Furman. Ms. Furman respectfully asks this court to reverse the district court's grant of summary judgment on two bases. The first is there is ample evidence in our record to show that respondents were negligent in maintaining their stairs and that the deteriorated condition was at least one substantial factor in causing Ms. Furman's fall. The second is the district court erred when it decided that a building code expert and their opinion testimony was required to show that these stairs were dangerously narrow. We set forth a lot of case law, and that case law has analogous facts that says where the condition is apparent to the jury and within their ordinary purview, we don't need expert testimony to talk about the dangerous condition.
But I sit here and I think of if I was a juror, if this was, you know, a court matter, I don't understand depth. I don't know what's correct. I mean, aren't you inviting, without guidance from an expert, quite a bit of speculation?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, and the reason for that is...
I mean, but this was summary judgment, so you've got to have something that gets you over that burden. So I don't know how you get there without having something about the dimensions or the code presented or somebody that can talk about that.
Your Honor, so the dimensions are in Ms. Furman's answers to interrogatories, which were part of the record. The stairs...
meaningless to me. What does it mean?
I disagree that they're meaningless given all of the testimony about how dangerous these stairs were and how an average foot wouldn't fit on them and how many prior falls and trips and slips happened on these stairs. Additionally, there was a significant wrist injury that happened a couple years before Ms. Furman's fall. Given all of the warnings that respondents were given by these folks who encounter these stairs day after day after day, reasonable care would have been to do something about this trip hazard that they were informed of, and that didn't happen here. Or at least the jury should decide what is reasonable under those circumstances. Every negligence case is decided under the circumstances of its case. And here we have significant testimony from many of these workers that these stairs were dangerously narrow, and they warned the respondents about this, but respondents did nothing about it for 2 to 3 seasons before Ms. Furman's fall. So that's the testimony that should get this case to the jury with respect to the narrowness issue. The case law, like Roe and Staub, also show that where the condition is plain to the jurors, the building code doesn't come into play. In Roe, there was affidavits, there was testimony, there was a video, there were measurements and photographs. And this court decided that the building code wasn't necessary for the jury to decide whether or not those stairs were in a dangerous condition. Staub gives good guidance, I believe in footnote 11, about how it doesn't need to decide whether or not the building code applied to its facts because there is evidence of deposition testimony, affidavits, and photographs of those stairs.
But, you know, I do agree with you, Staub, I think is your best case, but, you know, one difference in Staub between this case and that case was the absence, well, you know, in Staub the plaintiff had died, whereas here we have the plaintiff's testimony and, you know, in looking at the interrogatory answers, number 5, as plaintiff ascended the stairs, her toe caught on a stair and she tripped. In an attempt to regain her balance, the plaintiff attempted to step backwards onto the stair below. However, the stairs were too narrow. And then in the deposition testimony, you know, she goes at length to sort of explain how this happened. But what I did not see in either those answers or in the transcript was, you know, and the reason I tripped was because, you know, the stairs were worn and warped and, you know, horrible and decrepit and peeling and falling apart. And there seems to be some evidence of that. But the problem is when we get to, you know, the actual proximate cause or the actual negligence, the breach of the standard of care, what we see, and I agree with Judge Werke, is, you know, it's kind of narrow. Well, how narrow? And, I mean, I don't know. And even your other person who testified in his deposition, well, you know, I fix a lot of things. He admitted he didn't know, you know, what the codes were. And I don't think the average juror would know whether these stairs are too narrow or not without some sort of expert testimony. So why am I wrong?
So, Your Honor, Mr. Taylor, he testified that he measured the depth of these stairs before and after Ms. Furman's fall, and he consulted the building code. He doesn't remember which version of the building code he consulted.
Right, but I mean, that's like saying, you know, that's like saying, well, you know, I looked at my stairs and they look kind of narrow, and I didn't know what the building code says either, but by God, they look narrow. I don't think that's enough. If the cause of action is the reason she fell was because the stairs were too narrow, and that sounds like why she did fell. You know, she kind of caught her foot there. But that, I think, requires expert testimony, because how would the average juror know whether they're too narrow or not depending on what code was in existence in 1960?
So the jury's job is going to just be to decide what's reasonable care under the circumstances. And the circumstances here.
How do you establish that? How do you establish the standard of care under these facts when it's too narrow or not? I don't think it's within the average juror's knowledge as to whether a stair is too narrow or not, you know, whether it complies with the code.
And Your Honor, we point to, I think, well, the defense brings it, or sorry, respondents bring them up in their brief, and we address them in our reply, those four cases about expert testimony. We've got two accident reconstruction cases where the Minnesota Supreme Court said it was error to admit those crash experts' opinions because jurors know how vehicles interact when they collide. There's also the Tracy case, which says you don't need an engineer's testimony to say that the curb was a reasonable height and that the safety barrier was reasonable strength. That's within the purview of the jury because the evidence showed those conditions and the jury can apply its common sense. The jury uses the road every day and can decide whether or not reasonable care was provided there. And in this circumstance, reasonable care would dictate doing something about the depth of these stairs when you've got fall and trip and fall and trip years and years. And
okay, so your client, right, let's just say we're right out in the hallway here where there's stairs, and I'm going up, and I start to fall, which is what she did. She tried to catch her balance by putting her foot on the next stairway. And then I claim that the step is too narrow. Well, how does anybody know if it was too narrow? I mean, that's where I'm getting at is your expert testimony, something to demonstrate that it was 6 inches and the average foot is a foot, seems to me to clarify that versus just I lost my balance. I mean, she has her testimony, but how do we know about this depth? I keep thinking of the courthouse I used to be in, and I used to complain about the depth of the steps all the time. Everybody thought I was, you know, never mind, that's neither here nor there. But that's what I'm finding missing. So how do we get there? How do we figure out what this, the depth that she couldn't regain her balance, how do we know?
And, Your Honor, there's not going to be a number of, like, inches, or they need to be a precise distance in depth. Because this is negligence, the standard of care is reasonable care under the circumstances, which is kind of amorphous, which isn't, like, ideal when somebody wants a very concrete set of this versus that.
But then I can go out there and fall backwards and say, oh, the stairs were too narrow. I mean, it doesn't play out, does it?
If you've got other testimony alerting whoever's in charge of maintaining those steps that, hey, other people have tripped and fallen because these stairs are too narrow and they've had complaints in the past about these stairs being too narrow, then that should go to a jury to decide whether ordinary care was used under the circumstances. If who's ever in charge of those steps keeps getting warning after warning after warning that, hey, these stairs are a trip hazard and they're too narrow, somebody broke their wrist a couple years ago, and then Ms. Furman has these significant orthopedic injuries, and they still hadn't done anything about it, a jury should decide whether or not reasonable care was used.
Is there argument, and here I'm looking at paragraph 12 of your cause of action, in their failure to warn of a dangerous condition, in their failure to keep the area in a state of reasonable care, let's focus on, I guess, it seems now like we're talking about dangerous condition. So, but, and the dangerous condition is, as I understand it, is the stairs were too narrow and accidents occurred in the past, accidents continue to occur. So if that's the case, then all this stuff about how crummy the wooden stairs were is irrelevant. Because the issue is, it was too narrow. That's a dangerous condition. So is that the cause of action that goes to the jury? That the stairs were so narrow, they were dangerous.
So, Your Honor, to clarify, we've got, I think, three parts to this. The first is they're too narrow. That's its own proximate cause. The dangerous condition, the deteriorated state of these stairs, is what initially caused her to trip. That's what caught the toe of her tennis shoe and caused her to lose her balance. Then being too narrow is what prevented her from catching her balance. And these two conditions on the same set of stairs that 150 to 200 people use every day and which respondents have been warned about is a trip hazard for years and did nothing about, that's a question that should go to the jury, whether these two conditions combined created the dangerous condition that caused Ms. Furman to fall and break her femur and wrist. So it's each one independently and the two together.
And you're saying as a matter of law, no expert testimony is needed to testify as to the narrowness of the stairs. That's something that's within the common knowledge of a juror. They can just look at the picture and say, yep, too narrow.
I say that, and the Minnesota Supreme Court says that in Staub, and this court said it in Roe. Unless the court...
Didn't Roe involve expert testimony?
It did, and it severely narrowed that expert's testimony. It said the expert couldn't testify about the building code because the court decided as a matter of law that the building code, or that the stairs weren't subject to the building code that the expert wanted to use at that time.
And is that the case here?
I don't know that we know which version of the building code would apply here, but we've got a lot of evidence and a lot of testimony that these stairs were dangerously narrow from folks who used them day in and day out.
But what if they were compliant with code in 1960?
And we've got those
three
cases.
Because I don't know, people had narrower feet then or something.
It could be. But we've got those.
What if they don't comply with the code today?
Right.
Would you need expert testimony to establish that?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And we cite the Blazing, Blatz, and Wendiger cases that say when you comply with a statute or an ordinance that's not a get-out-of-negligence-free card, you can still show ordinary care hadn't been used. And we've got a lot of testimony.
The ordinary care in those cases would go to how you're maintaining it, not whether, as a matter of law, it's supposed to be 12 inches and instead it's 5 inches.
And Your Honor, here the maintenance is that they're too narrow because so many people have told the owners that they're too narrow and they're a trip hazard. There's ample evidence from folks who use this day in and day out that these are too narrow, they're a trip hazard. Somebody broke their wrist. Ms. Furman broke her femur. And they didn't do anything about it until after Ms. Furman broke her femur. They were on warning about it and they did nothing about it. And these stairs have been around since at least 1968. And no structural maintenance has been done to these stairs that's in the record at all. The jury should decide whether that is reasonable care under these circumstances. I'm happy to answer any questions the court has otherwise.
You will have rebuttal, so I'm sure we'll...
Thank you, Your Honor.
...have some questions then. We'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Nick Jacoby. I represent the respondents in this matter, Town and Country Campground, and Jill and David Olmstead. As it sounds like the court's grasped onto, this case is really, there's two issues, and they're relatively straightforward, simple issues in this case. One is, what facts are material to the fall? And the second issue, is there competent evidence to demonstrate that the respondents were negligent? The key here is to whittle down and focus in the material facts, right? So it kind of brings me back to my law school days. It brings me back to...
God forbid.
Yes, I know. What is a material fact versus just a regular fact? And, you know, Rule 56 sets forth the standard for summary judgment. It says there's no issue to any material fact. And the case law is pretty instructive on this. A fact is material for purposes of summary judgment if its resolution will affect the outcome of a case. Factual disputes that are irrelevant are not counted. And so for a fact to be material, it has to have some role, some relationship to the cause of the fall in this case. So appellant raises many facts. We're told that the wood on the stairs is rotting, that the wood is splitting, that the wood is chipped. We're told that the deck boards were warped, that there were frayed and loose mats.
So all of that is kind of common knowledge to people. Why can't we infer that that was enough for summary judgment to survive? I mean, you know, they had pictures and people complained about this. I mean, why does he need to have an expert?
Well, so because those issues have nothing to do with the fall. That would be like slipping on ice in a parking lot and then claiming that you were negligent because there was a pothole in that parking lot 20 feet from where you fell. One has nothing to do with the other. The only claim throughout this entire case that in any way caused Ms. Furman to fall was the depth of the tread. That has been her single allegation with what is wrong with these steps that in any way caused her to fall. Judge Connolly pointed out in the complaint, paragraph 11, appellant states, as plaintiff ascended the stairs, she tripped. In an attempt to regain her balance, she stepped backwards onto the stair below. Unbeknownst to plaintiff, the stairs were too narrow, causing her to fall down the stairs onto the cement. There is no mention in this entire complaint of any alleged defect other than the narrowness of the steps.
So you disagree with opposing counsel's statement just a few moments ago that it has to do with the deterioration and the narrowness?
There is no evidence that I'm aware of on the record that the initial trip where she claims she caught her toe, there's no evidence anywhere that she's even claiming that that was caused by some defect in the stairs or some negligence. These are arguments that counsel has made, but if you look at her testimony, you look at her answers to interrogatories, she clearly says that she is moving her foot up and she catches the toe on the next tread. She doesn't say, I caught it on the next tread because the mat was fraying. She doesn't say, I caught it on the next tread because the wood was splintered. She just says she caught her toe. She tripped. It happens. People trip on stairs. She's claiming, though, that when she tripped and started to come back, she couldn't get her foot down because the treads were too narrow. That's the allegation that's made in her complaint. That's the allegation that's made in her answers to interrogatories. And again, we know from herself specifically, and that's why this case is very different from Staub. She can tell us exactly how she fell. You know, when we knew, we can read her transcript, and it's in the briefs of exactly how she fell. So the only material fact in this is the depth of the stairs.
Why do you need expert testimony to establish the stairs are too narrow?
That's a great question. And I think it's interesting, and it's worth pointing out what Judge Vra looked at with this testimony. She says, well, look at these fact witnesses can't really even agree on what's too narrow. Pat Beckett testified that the steps were only dangerous to people with feet her size or larger. She has a size 6 foot. So in Patricia Beckett's world, if you have a size 7 foot, the stairs are dangerous. If you have a size 6 foot, they're okay. Tom Taylor testified that due to his smaller feet, he had no trouble using the stairs. KP Enderly testified that he had no independent knowledge of the building code and lacked knowledge of the proper depth of the stairs. I think what the court was struggling with is, she addresses it in her order, is the appellant plaintiff didn't even provide any kind of standard in which a jury could analyze this. And I think, you know, one can do a sort of thought experiment and say, okay, if everybody in here were asked if the stairs in their home were safe, or the tread depth was okay, everyone would probably say, yeah, I think they're safe. I think the stairs in my home are safe. The follow-up question would be, well, how deep are the treads on your stairs? And I would bet that no one in this room could tell you what the depth of the stairs are. And so we've got to be given some parameters to test this theory that they're too narrow, and we don't have any. And that's what an expert would do. They would say, well, listen, you know, is the depth dependent on the location of the stairs? Does it matter if there's stairs to a basement or a cellar or a fire escape? Does it depend on the height of the riser of the stairs? Is there a code requirement? You know, if so, what is that? And I think when we look at case law, it's hard because these are all very case-specific, fact-specific questions. So trying to apply case law, for example, Taylor from 1937, when we're dealing with the 10th Avenue Bridge that was designed when the vehicles passing over the bridge were horses and buggies, and whether a stair is sufficiently high to protect cars from going off the side, that's far different from the situation that we have here. The test can't be the size of one's foot fitting on the tread. If that's the case, the Minnesota Justice Center's stairs outside are not safe for my feet, which don't fit on the stairs front to back. It's just we've got to provide the jury with something to look at, something to grab on. We know that the stairs were 9 inches deep. Is that enough? Do they need to be 9.5 inches? Can they be 8 inches? A jury would left, I think the judge said, wildly speculating as to what a safe tread is. I think the one thing I wanted to point out is the judge did not say that the plaintiff had to have a code expert. The judge didn't say they had to show that there's a breach of code. The judge said that you could show that the stairs violated a building code, which then you'd, of course, have an argument that there's a negligence per se if that applicable building code indeed applied to the stairs. Or you need to produce expert opinion regarding the appropriate. It was one or the other. And given that they failed to produce evidence or competent testimony of what a safe tread depth is, the judge was left really with no other options under the law than to dismiss the case. Your Honors, I have of nothing further. If you have questions for me, I'm happy to answer them.
don't believe we do. Thank you very much, Counsel.
Thank you.
Counsel for the appellant, you will have the last word, sir.
May it please the court. I just want to address the characterization of the testimony of Ms. Beckett, Mr. Taylor, and Mr. Enderle. Ms. Beckett did not testify that she felt the stairs were safe for her. She testified that she tripped on them a dozen times, and that's at her deposition, page 21, lines 1 through 10. Mr. Taylor did not testify that he thought the stairs were safe. He doesn't. On page 29, line 24 through page 30, line 7, he said he didn't fall because he was cautious and because of his dexterity. It had nothing to do with the size of his foot. Mr. Enderle testified from his experience and common sense that these stairs were too narrow. With respect to the example about the stairs in our homes, I don't think the stairs in our homes are subject to the type of multiple trips and falls and slips and warnings that went unheeded year after year after year like these steps were. And that brings us to the standard of care and negligence action, which is reasonable care under the circumstances. The jury's got experience with stairs. It can decide whether or not the landowner here used reasonable care under these circumstances. This case should go to a jury, unless the court has any questions.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, counsel. We will be issuing our opinion within the statutory time frame, and we appreciate the quality of the briefs.